It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I was thinking about coming out of the shoot here and telling y'all about my new boots that I got on, but y'all want to talk about puppy chow?
What is that, ostrich?
Hell no, that's python.
It's Sturdy's Daily.
Before we get to that boner.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Hey, you know what happens before you get to that boner? You get that 75% chub. Hey, look out now.
Quarter chub.
And hey, I better be good enough for them Texans, baby. I'll take a 75% chub from the Texans this coming week. But we do want to remind our listeners of a little something, man. We got a Kids Read Radiothon going on. It's that time of year. We do it every year. The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation works directly with underserved elementary schools in Houston, in the Houston Independent School District and Spring Branch Independent School District, as well as a plethora of other early childhood learning centers to ensure that students have the literacy resources they need to be successful. Look, here's the deal, man. In H-Town, in our beautiful city, 61% of children in low-income families have no books in their home. 79% of Houston school children are economically disadvantaged, meaning books are a luxury their families cannot afford. And we're talking about kids here. We're talking about impacting a kid's life in a major, major way. And we do it every year, and it always turns out to be a great fundraiser for us, and we are proud to help in the ways that we can here at Sports Radio 610, as well as Odyssey Houston, across our stations here, our network of stations. Here's what you got to do. We're talking about helping the kids here via putting books in their hands and in their homes. So you text new books, all one word, no spaces, to 41444, NEWBOOKS, new books, all one word, no spaces, to 41444. And look, when you text that number, when you text new books to that number, 41444, they'll shoot you directly a link to donate any amount. So donate any amount you got. Appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks for the support. But here's a little inside information. $30 gets a child 6 new books that they get to choose themselves, right? So this isn't just dropping books on a doorstop. No, on a doorstep. No, this is the kids actually get to select the books that interest them, right? You can donate $30 for one kid. 10 kids is $300. If you want to sponsor a whole classroom of kids, 30 kids, that'd be $900. And
this is the best part right here.
The biggest part, man. Big shout out to Phillip 66. Big shout out to Phillip 66 on the drive. On the drive today, all donations that are made during the drive here, 2 to 6, they will be matched by Phillip 66 up to $25,000. Ron, I know we put a pretty good dent in that $25,000. Heck, we may have already passed it, to be honest with you. But where are we sitting over there?
We started the show $17,200+, and now we sit here 2 hours in, $44,246 as of right now, nearly halfway to the goal. And you can keep donating. And like you said, our good friends at Phillip 66 will match up to $25,000. As you said, man, that is shot. But that don't mean you don't have to not continue to donate to help out people. We do it every year, and it's always such a great call.
Well, I think, you know, we do a lot of different promoting, educating, whatever you want to call it, but you know, and we always get bullet points of stats or information, data to share, and it, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of it doesn't always cut through. If this kind of stuff doesn't cut through to you, I don't know if you got a heart, man. Look, this is one more point that they make here. Children who do not read proficiently by the end of their third grade are 4 times more likely to drop out of school, right? Low literacy rates impact all of us and have been in linked to community metrics such as crime rates, unemployment, poor health, and much, much more. But that, well, that beginning right there, man, if they're not reading proficiently, by the end of third grade, they're four times more likely to drop out of school. That's what we're trying to change here, and we're trying to do it via the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, the Houston Independent School District, the Spring Branch Independent School District, and H-Town, stand up one time. I mean, we always do. Greatly appreciate everybody that's already donated. If you hadn't, please consider it. And let's drive this thing north, man. Get this thing up to as much as we possibly can. I'm Clint Sterner, alongside Ron Ugly. That is Ron, the show, Ugly. And that's T-Mill, Tyler Milner, behind the glass on the ones and twos. And guys, look, it was a rough outing for the Texans. It was a frustrating, it's one thing to lose, but it was a frustrating loss, right? And we spent a lot of times talking about what we saw that was negative. And I got to bring a few things to the table. There's no doubt, I've made it very clear over 2.5 shows this week already, that there is zero excuse not to feed Nico Collins last week. And damn it, if it didn't shine a bright light on it, after what we watched last week, there damn sure is not a bigger time to absolutely feed Nico Collins, right? Continue getting production from Watson and Higgins. They got some decent production out of Watson. I thought it was going to be Jalen Noel. I thought Noel was going to be the one that was more targeted.
He seemed
to
only get that one screen on a third down and long.
Yeah, and it turned out to be Watson. Watson went out there and had some catches. I think he had one drop, but he actually got interfered with.
He got a couple of penalties yep. from that late character.
I thought Higgins had a couple of big catches. I think, for some reason, Higgins looks almost timid to me out there, like he's kind of thinking a lot, you know. He's not really, which is, he's a rookie. No. It's not crazy, not uncommon for that to happen. I tell you what, Nick Caley ran him down there like Bobby Slowick used to do, ran him down there and 21 personnel was trying to run a power run with him off the edge, and that safety blew his ass up and laid him on his back, and it was one of them we might not want to do that again.
Well,
everybody out here talks about it, compares him to Nico Collins, and I'm like, no, go look at him. And it's just like, Nico's a grown-ass man. This fella here got some filling out to do. And so I don't know if I would suggest you do that much more, but again, you feed Nico, you keep getting production out of Watson and Higgins, and even, you know, if you can get Noel going. I think Noel had a corner route, a high corner route versus man one time that I can't believe that CJ didn't throw up. I can't remember if he got pressured or not, but Noel is a guy that they can rely on. Noel is a guy that'll end up making some plays for him, and to be honest with you, he may make some plays over the top, so keep your eyes on him, but keep doing all that. Ron, I can't believe I'm going to say this, man. CJ has to look for Dalton Schultz, man.
The $12 million man.
I got to tip
Dalton
my cap.
Schultz?
I got to tip my cap to 12 milli. I got to tip my cap, man. He's not the most physical human being on Sunday afternoon. He was not, but he's at least trying. But I'm gonna tell you, there are, and I noticed this last year in some film. You and I talked about it. I noticed it in training camp this year. He's open a lot, man. He's open a lot. He's available a lot.
And there were moments, as you said, last year I was thinking that. There were moments last year where he bypassed him to go other places.
Yeah, I chalked it up to, hey, this whole aggressive, stretch the field kind of mentality. So you look up and we're trying to stretch the field, throwing into crowds, and Dalton Schultz is running a whip route, and he's wide. Ain't nobody within 10, 15 yards of him. He's wide open.
And now that's what you're supposed to be looking at.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the mentality. And look, that right there didn't necessarily happen this week. It wasn't that obvious. But I do, you know, right from jump, you know, the ball he throws and sails over Nico's head the first time, the 50-50 ball that he threw in the bench area. I mean, if you just look at how that thing unfolds, and hell, CJ told us they were playing a lot of shell coverage, playing a lot of cover two. Well, they do that in the middle of the field. Dalton Schultz is running an in route with outside leverage, and he just gives a little head nod and turns in there. And that's candy from a baby type of easy for CJ Stroud. And the coverage dictated you go there, and he didn't. Like, there's, I don't know, and I'm not saying it's personal, but like there's something there where I just believe that really right behind feeding Nico, if we're talking pass game, when you're not feeding Nico, like plays that aren't designed to specifically take you to Nico, like for him, they're 12 packages, like they're his, they're his. Like you've got to look for Dalton Schultz more. He has to, man. Again, he's open, he's available, he's very good at the top of his routes. I know that's one thing the tight ends have been working on. Nick Cayley, D'Amico Ryans, they all rant and raved about how Cade Stover had gotten better there. But man, the film will tell you that Dalton Schultz is open. Dalton Schultz is a guy that makes himself available. He's quarterback friendly. And, you know, CJ, for whatever reason, as kind of overlooks him, I think.
So you thought he missed him a couple of times?
I thought he overlooked him. I'm being more than fair. I'm saying when I come to the line of scrimmage, I got Nico outside running a go route versus a cover two look with a too high safety, and I got Dalton Schultz on a 10 to 12 yard dig route or crossing route, basic cross route over the middle of the field. Everything, the outside leverage on the tight end, the two high safeties, everything says do not throw the back shoulder, and everything says work the middle of the field, and you choose to throw the back shoulder into the stands. Now, he may have got, you know, confused, or he may have not seen it or whatever, but yeah. Bottom line is I think he's got to find him more, Ron. I think with the tight end room the way it is, with Christian Kirk and Berrios out, I think there's a lack of options for C.J. Stroud, and I really do believe this. I believe that the feed Nico thing makes this team significantly better, and I don't mean just look his way. I mean purposefully put him in places to where there is no read. It's Nico. We're going to hand it to him. We're going to toss it to him. We're going to screen it to him. He's going to get his touches. Right, that part of it, the feeding Nick Chubb thing is a big part of it. I'd throw screens to Nick Chubb. I would not just run him between the tackles. I'd leave him in there and do some different stuff. He's really good in the pass protection game. But the third part of that is Dalton Schultz has to step up. He's got to show up and show out. And I say that knowing that, man, there's opportunity.
Yeah, but not just there's opportunity, Clint. Like, listen, we talked about it last year, and I think it is fair. He was at a lot of times in positions that aren't his strength.
From a pass protecting standpoint, sure.
Yeah, and let's just be honest. Like, he's a tight end. He's probably going to be asked to be a blocker. But obviously, it's not his strong point. But the reason why he got paid, as we talk about the money he got paid and the $12 million a year, is because he is one of the better pass receiving tight ends, right? That's why you went and paid him the money you paid him, right? Maybe not total package, but in terms of running routes and being a receiving tight end, Dalton Schultz, that's why you paid him the money. And to me, he's got to be a part of the game plan, right? He's got to be. It's not just a hey man. You should look at him a little bit. No, he's got to be one of the
go-to guys.
He's making as much as anybody over there.
Well, he's got to. He's the closest thing to the quarterback, especially with Christian Kirk out. He's right there in your hip pocket every single snap. You've got to get that chemistry back with him. I don't know if it's a product of, hey, man, we've had Tank Dell, we've had Steph Diggs, we've got Nico Collins, we've got Joe Mixon, and Dalton Schultz kind of got lost in the shuffle or what, but we've got to get back to that offensively. And I'm telling you, as I said, the film says he's winning. The film says there's throws there to be made. And CJ made a couple of big boy throws to him and in tight coverage and kind of then that stuff still has to happen. But there are easy layups that I think CJ is working somewhere else, and they got to figure that out. But Dalton Schultz, look, I thought the film showed well for him this week. And I think that is a big part of you know, the way that this offense can get back on track. More Dalton Schultz. Look for Dalton Schultz. This offense needs it. With all the tight end injuries, hell, Nick Cayley needs it. It's time for the veterans that are long in the tooth and can make plays to go out there and be relied upon to make plays. Forget this spreading the ball around crap, right? I mean, I just you're not that team, man. You're not that team. You don't have Tom Brady. You're not you are. This is 2025 NFL. Get the ball to your playmakers, period. And I think Dalton Schultz has to be.
But also, honestly, like, he should be getting 6-7 targets.
No question.
In this game, especially where there's no Christian Kirk.
No question.
And you have rookies going in. He should be getting.
Yeah, he should be the outlet on a lot of this pressure stuff. And here's the other part of this, Ron, is that there were two different, you know, small sample sizes, but two obvious Nick Chubb drives where you could see the play action working really well off that. You know, they talk about these pop passes and these now passes off that quick play action. He could be a huge factor in that. And if you can get Nick Chubb downhill the way that he was a couple of times last week, and you don't have to do it the whole game, you don't have to have 100 yards, but when you get that rolling on a drive the way like we saw last week where it's two or three runs in a row, and then you hit him with that token fake and you pop Dalton Schultz right over the top of those linebackers or in a seam between a linebacker and a nickel defender, man, that is now you're dictating to them. Now you're counterpunching in a deadly manner, right? So that Dalton Schultz just has to play a big part of what CJ's got to understand. Dalton Schultz is going to play a big part in his ability to survive. You know, that's the reality of it. He's out there every play. He sees the game through the quarterback's lens. He's closest to you when you're getting pressure like that. And like I said, the film shows he's available. So we'll see. I'm there with Dalton Schultz. I was extremely frustrated last year. I think he showed well this week on film, and hopefully he can keep it rolling.
All right, as we continue, we'll get you caught up on the latest news with the Astros. Lineup is out as they take on the Blue Jays to try to that's a good thing about baseball. The next day, you got to come back out there and you can try to wash off that tough loss last night. But speaking of last night, there is an update on Luis Garcia. We'll have that for you when we return right here live on The Drive.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right, welcome back in as The Drive continues. Remember, coming up here at 440, we will hear from our guy. It is Wednesday. That means Brandon Scott joins us with his Texans report. And should hear a lot from him. And I saw him send some tweets out. They said he think he drank a little bit too much Kool-Aid.
He thinks he may have drank a little too much off-season training camp Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Because you remember he was on with us last week and he said, before the season started, I had this one as a loss, but they got to me. He said, they got me. And we'll see what he's thinking right now, what he's talking about with the Texans coming up here in just a bit. But lineups are out for the Astros as they got game two. But before we get there, Clint, the news on Luis Garcia. Look there in the early part of the game, the third inning, he threw a pitch and immediately he called for the training staff and the Astros dugout to come out, and you could see it in his face, Clint. It looked like something's wrong. It looked like he was really struggling, and so he came out immediately. Even after the game, he said, he didn't want to speak to the media until he found out the severity of the injury. Tyler, can you guess what the injury is? Can you guess what the injury is titled?
Oh, I got no clue. I haven't even seen the email.
I know it. Oh, the old right elbow discomfort.
Oh, you know, it was right elbow discomfort or inflammation, or forearm tightness.
Then that's hell. But right elbow discomfort, and he is officially going on the 15-day IL. That is happening.
Think about that, Ron. And look, I know these guys are paid handsomely, I guess to some degree, not all of them maybe at this point, but think about blowing your elbow up, going and getting surgery, rehabbing your ass off, going through all the Sugar Lands and Corpus Christi's and Florida Gulf Coast Leagues and all that goes with coming back. You get out there, you throw one good game, and you're second out, and you're out there juiced up, ready to rock and roll, and you feel something. You feel something in that elbow that just ain't right. Boy, that's got to be – I mean, you literally – your heart just has to sink, man. I mean, it has to be one of them deals of just like, not again.
But everybody – and it probably sucks the air out of the team and everybody, like – because, he had been pitching well. And like you said a week or two ago, last week, hey – I really don't care who it is. We know we got the top two guys. All right, we got Arrigetti, Garcia, Javier. I just need one of those three. Alexander threw him. I just need one of those three.
It wasn't even him.
And And in that time, and in that time frame, Spencer Arrighetti and now Luis Garcia are both out of the mix. And the way that we saw the report yesterday of Spencer Arrighetti, who has not even begun throwing yet, and now this with Luis Garcia. I mean, Luis Garcia, he just had wasn't he the one, Tyler, had multiple setbacks in his Tommy John, and they had to stop and start him?
Oh, yeah.
And he's been out, and he was out longer than Javier.
Yeah, yeah, 2 years or something, right?
And right, this has been what, let's say, what, 2 months and a half since, if you took combine his pitching in the minors and then all the way up until yesterday, it's probably been about a month and a half. And now already, as you said, Clint, he feels something felt uncomfortable that he had to stop.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably, you know, I would think they're not going to, they're going to be very, very cautious with this. Like, I would be surprised, Clint, that this is a 15-day deal and then he comes back.
I mean, yeah, look, if they pushed him to fast-track this deal and pushed him out there too early and it's injured now, hell, I think they'd have a damn lawsuit on their hands if they do it again, yeah. I'd imagine. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's unfortunate for Luis Garcia. I don't buy the 15-day IL. I think the looks of that, he's done. You got to be pitching at a playoff-caliber level from here on out.
They got to ramp him up again if he would go again. And I don't think he would do that. And then, as we heard with Arrighetti, we heard Joe Espada say last week, we are running out of time with him. Yep. And hell, this happened, you know, a week later. So just a really weird deal. And I know we talked about it before, but Clint, there has to be not just an adjustment. There has to be major adjustments on what it is they're doing from a training perspective, medical perspective, coaching perspective. They have got to figure out something. I mean, this one just came across, and the headline is Astros lose yet another pitcher. I mean, and they're just losing them left and right, and at a rate that is crazy. This year, it's even more, but this is not, it didn't just start this year, Clint. We can roll over the last three years, and they've been dropping guys like flies.
I wonder what the protocol is. Like, I wonder if this is to a degree where Major League Baseball is like, we got to investigate what the hell's going on over there, and investigate maybe a strong term, but we got to go over there and figure out what's going on, because I mean, obviously the players in the organization are in harm's way. Like, this, I don't think this is just a run of like, hey man. Dude's got bad elbows. Dudes are fragile. They're injury prone. Like, clearly something they're doing in a rehab sense or a ramp up sense or something they're doing from a strength and conditioning standpoint. Something they're doing that's trying to generate more spin on the ball. Something they're doing has to be part of what the issue is here. And I just wonder how bad does it have to be before, you know, Major League Baseball says, no, we got to take a little closer look at this. I'm with you. Like, if you're Crane, you got to be like, damn, I got to take a closer look. What the hell's going on down
there? We've got to look at something.
But I wonder if baseball is one that, from an injury perspective, I don't recall ever hearing it happen, but if there ever were a time, like, this is one where you got to look at it and go, gosh, dang, man, what are these guys doing over
there? We've seen, like, you know, obviously over the last several years, pitchers' injuries and arm injuries have taken a major jump over from the 90s, right? Like, we didn't see guys like this dropping.
Everything's about throwing it as hard as you can and spinning it as hard as you can, as long as you can, so much so that the expected start time of a starter in the game is significantly down. We've seen, I mean, guys that can go five innings are
gold.
I mean, gold, yeah. I mean, so it's –
The Astros are even taking it up another notch from other teams, which is just, and that's before we get to position players. Zach DiCenzo ever going to come back?
We got enough outfielders, man.
That damn hand.
These nuts.
You're right. By the way, the lineup today: Peña, Alvarez is in left field. Correa, Walker behind him, Sanchez in right. Myers in center, Caratini's the DH as they get Yiner in at catcher. Urias is at second base, and that is Jason Alexander getting the ball today. That does mean no Altuve in the lineup today. Guessing it's a scheduled day off, but no Altuve. But that is the lineup as the Astros try to get back at it and get over that tough loss last night. All right. Texas Report, Brandon Scott, will get his thoughts on the Astros as they drop the one of the Rams and then they move forward to get ready for a big Monday night game. B. Scott coming up next.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryans, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
You ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, it's 4:40. It's a Wednesday. That means we have a Texans report. Usually, this is a day where we hear from D'Amico and CJ, but everything is pushed back with Monday night football happening, so that will happen tomorrow. But we've heard from D'Amico plenty of times this week and since the game ended in. I saw you. You sent out a tweet last week about on Sunday. Maybe you drank too much of the Kool-Aid, and I know you were leaning Texans when we talked last week. Just from the last game, what surprised you the most, or what part of the Kool-Aid do you think you drank too much now after watching one game?
Yeah, so I got two separate answers for that. I think what surprised me the most was actually that the secondary had its moments where, look, you talk about this being the best secondary in NFL or possibly the best secondary in NFL. They did not necessarily look like that. I understand the defense overall performed well, only held the team to 14 points. And if there was a win out of the game, it probably would be overall the defensive effort, only holding the team to 14 points. You like to think that your offense could back you up enough where you could win a game like that. But to me, it was still disappointing from a secondary standpoint. And some of the stuff that D'Amico talked about earlier in the week with their eye discipline and some of the more, I would say, game-deciding plays later on in the game, the secondary did not necessarily meet or live up to the expectations in that game. That's the part that surprised me. The part about drinking the Kool-Aid, though, was the offense. Like, I had sold myself over the last few weeks. All of us have done shows together where I talked myself into this reconfigured offensive line. I had talked myself into the physicality. Some of the stuff, Clint, that you talked about when we first went out there to training camp and kind of could see them establishing this new brand of football of, hey, everything's going to start up front. We're going to run the football. It's going to be a physical football team. I think I bought a little bit too much into that before I actually saw it. That was the Kool-Aid that I thought I drank a little bit too much of.
You know, what did you think? Because I think defensively, the overall production or lack thereof by the Rams, I think was really impressive. I think this Rams offense is going to end up being one of the better offenses in the league. That's an impressive group. And they are elite in some of the different operational stuff, processes that we see the Texans struggling with. They are absolutely elite. So, to hold that group to 14 points, I think was really impressive. But to your point, you know, I think Kamari Lassiter got his eyes in the backfield one time in a man-to-man situation, gave up a touchdown. I think Jalen Petrie got his eyes in the backfield one time and gave up the nail in the coffin at the end of the game.
Yep.
I think Derek Stingley Jr. If we're being honest, for a Derek Stingley Jr. standard, I think he got abused a couple of times, three or four different times. He got targeted a couple of times. What do you attribute that to? Because that is not – you know, I expect, hey, man, Jalen Petrie's in man-to-man coverage, and he just 20 yards downfield, they ran away from him. Or Kamari Lassiter just, hey, man, doesn't have that top-end speed that some corners have, and so they ran a go route by. I don't expect what I saw from some of those key defenders in that secondary. What do you attribute that
to?
Yeah,
so as disappointing as it was to see, I am going to attribute it, at least for now, as we sit here going into week two, I'm going to attribute it to I don't know if rust is the right word, but still kind of getting the hang of it, still kind of getting into the swing of things, I think is what I'm going to. Now, if it becomes a pattern, it becomes a trend,
yeah,
then we got bigger questions to answer. But right now, I'm willing to give them a little bit of a pass for it, even though we can acknowledge that there were parts of it that were unexpected. It was really up and down because there were moments when they were really on top of
it. Sure, yeah.
And I think that's what helped them hold the Rams to only 14 points. But when it fell out the bottom, it really did, you know, and so that, and I think that's what tilted the game.
Well,
a
they
lot of ways.
Look, they got some special teams, you know, grace. They got a couple of big plays offensively. They got called back that probably would have bust that thing open. But the I'm glad you said that because that's my take on it. I do wonder, guys, how much like Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. We walked over there every day at practice and watched them just abuse the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. And so how many times did Nico Collins really get to do work on or really, I guess on the flip side, when did Derek Stingley really see a quarterback wide receiver combo where we're attacking your ass? When did Kamari Lassiter get held accountable? When did Jalen Petrie actually get targeted throughout camp, given how we watched the quarterback and the O-line struggle so much?
And
so
the pressure was good.
I agree with you, my
the
point.
The pressure was good from the Texans, but it wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't overwhelming to just, hey, they're not going to be able to operate.
And I think the other side of that is pressure was fine from the Texans, but also kind of to Clint's earlier point about this being a better operation, a more fine-tuned operation between Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford, who's been doing it for 100 years now. Like, you could watch the Rams and see, oh, that's not the offense that the Texans had been practicing against all throughout that the Texans defense had been practicing against throughout training camp. And it's not necessarily a slight, but it is to acknowledge the Texans offense, long way to go, which we saw that play out on the field, and you know, versus the Rams offense that is pretty much already established and is what it is.
Yeah, Beast Guy here with this Texans report. Let's move to the other side of the ball. The offense obviously was the thing that struggled, and the biggest thing that we were talking about all offseason long, Nick Caley, but more importantly, the offensive line. And we got our first taste of it. There were some shuffles and even more shuffles in the game. Your thoughts of their performance, and are you getting more concerned at this point after game one of watching what they look like in this game against the Rams?
So the part that I was okay with was the actual play calling itself, for the most part. I mean, I think every game with pretty much any play caller, maybe outside of Shanahan and McVay themselves, but for the most part, you can pick apart a play or two here or there where you're like, I don't know about that one, and agree to disagree. But for the most part, I was actually okay with the play calling. The part that really got me, and I was on this when it seemed like it was going to go in this direction toward the end of last week when we saw Ed Ingram pop up on the injury report, it was that they were more than likely going to do this offensive line shuffle. And, man, I just don't like it. And I'm not going to pretend like that's what would have won or what actually lost them the game. I actually think that they struggled enough. It's hard to be like, to come in here and be like, man, they were Ed Ingram away, or they were a Juice Scruggs away.
Yeah.
Or, man, you put Ed Ingram and Christian Kirk in the game, and they are going to score touchdowns, and this thing is going to look a whole lot better. I don't want to lie and like, over-talk it and overdo it, but it also seemed like that's just a self-inflicted wound that you don't really have to go with. And that, look, if they think that their best five is playing musical chairs once one guy goes out, who am I to argue any different? I'm just saying, if you just look at it from a math standpoint, one guy goes down, but three guys have to sub.
Yeah.
That math does not math to me. So, like, where would you prefer to take your hit once you have to put in a reserve, right? Would you prefer to take it in three places or just the one spot where you need the reserve? And so, to me, even if you think that Cam Robinson is a better left tackle than, let's say, Juice Scruggs is a right guard, does that offset the fact that you have to move Arianti Urcery from the left to the right where he's more comfortable to where he's probably less comfortable no matter what he says? Does that supersede the fact that Titus Howard's probably a better tackle than he is a guard, even though you realize and know that he can play there?
Yeah.
On top of the fact that now you're inserting a backup who was Cam Robinson, who lost his job to the rookie that was at left tackle to begin with. So where would you prefer to take your L? How would you like to pick your poison? To me, I would rather just put in one reserve instead of making three people do something different.
Well, I think I love your point, and I think it's one of a few that just make it significantly more difficult on Nick Caley, right? I mean, now think about what you're saying. Like, going into that game, ideally, if you just plug Juice Scruggs in at right guard, you go, hey, I got a left tackle that's a rookie, I got to protect him. When you go to switching, if you didn't know it up front, you damn sure knew it early in that game. Hey, man, I got to help Cam Robinson over there. He is either sick, out of shape, or just not very good. Like, something's wrong over there. Oh, by the way, you still got that rookie over on the right side you got to take care of. Oh, by the way, your center just got hurt.
Yep.
Right? So, I mean, you like that offense. Think about the running back's decision. Hey, Caley, man, we're gonna get four different running backs touches instead of just putting one in there and letting him call plays and letting him design an offense around that particular guy. Right? I mean, and think about the lack of the Nico package I was talking about, of like not using your best, really your only healthy weapon that can hit his head on the goalpost. Like, all of that in itself, B. Scott, you've heard us talking about it, like, all of that is an issue. But then when you put it all together, it's like, hey, man, you got this dude over here who never called plays trying to manage all that stuff.
Well, and you've already got real actual problems. It does not make sense to me for you to create them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now you're creating more problems than you're fixing. You know, the whole one step forward, two step back mantra, right? To me, that's what they were doing with some of the decisions they made outside of some of the already built-in challenges that they face.
What do you think on that running back front? What do you think we see moving forward? Do you think we see more Nick Chubb?
Look, I think we see more Nick Chubb, but I also don't think we see – so can these things exist in the same time that we see more Nick Chubb, but we don't see less Dari Ogunbowale? Because I feel like it seems like they trust Dari Ogunbowale in a way that perhaps others do not. And look, I don't completely knock it. I think that they're kind of in a rock and a hard place with Joe Mixon not being. That was a big part of their plan, I think. And they probably just miscalculated that or did not anticipate that whatever's going on with Joe Mixon, it would be as serious as it is. But, man, like, I've been saying this. Like, I don't feel comfortable with the idea that we're going to treat Nick Chubb like it's 2020 or that he's going to have to be the bell cow. In an ideal world, you do have a committee and you're not running – Nick Chubb into the ground, but I don't know what kind of options they got. If Damian Pierce is going to be ineffective, Dari is Dari. You know, like I prefer to see more Nick Chubb than more Dari, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. So where do you go from there? Does Woody Marks get a more prominent role? It's unclear on exactly what direction they're going
to
go in there.
I mean, the right football thing to do, right? I mean, that makes sense is you play Nick Chubb and then you have a guy, whoever your second best is, that is a guy that now this guy's going to be my, hey man, Nick's tapping his helmet. All right, get in there. We trust you. If that were the role that Dari's in, that's fine. But it's planned from jump. Hell, Nick D'Amico said it in his postgame presser, or maybe it was his Tuesday presser. He said, oh no, the plan was to get all these running back rotations, get them touches, get them in the game. For what? You ain't that good.
Yeah.
You ain't good enough. You ain't good enough to go out there and get four different dudes touches.
But to me, Clint, that's the rock and the hard place because I agree with your point. I don't think you're good enough to do exactly what you're not good enough. Okay, let's just establish that. You're right. But at the same time, Nick Chubb at this stage in his career and then Joe Mixon is out. Like, I think they're playing a little bit scared there and trying not to overdo it with Nick Chubb. And I, for one, understand it. Not only understand it, I kind of agree with it, even if I don't like what that leaves you with. I don't like it, but this is where we are. But you do need to establish some sort of pecking order. It can't just be, we're just throwing it out there.
You got to know who you are. Like, I mean, your opportunities to score points with this offense are going to be few and far between, and it's really almost by design given your defense and everything. And now you're telling me as an offense, I can afford to do the offensive line stuff. I can afford to get multiple. I can afford to go out there and have Damian Pierce drop a freaking swing pass dead in his chest and not expect to pay for it down the road. I can go out there and hand it to Dari Ogunbowale on third and one in a short yardage situation in a one-score game, and it don't work out, and I can afford to do those. Like, those are the kind of things to me that, like, I mean – right, I mean, you got to look up at some point and be like, Nick's got to be like week six. Hey, boys, y'all are wearing me the hell out.
But look, as long as Joe Mixon is going to be out and not available to you, fact of the matter, they need Damian Pierce to not be bad. They don't have enough guys. Like, exactly what you just said.
I got to find out what Nick's got.
But I don't think that they're good enough to not use Damian Pierce. And they might have to. But that's gonna be a bad numbers game because now you're relying on Nick Chubb, who's older and injured, and you're relying on a rookie in Woody Marks, and then of course Dari Ogunbowale.
I tell you what, I'll take a Damian Pierce start week six if that means they commit to Nick Chubb and his legs fall off.
I'm not mad at it, but at the same, I think you're trying to be smart with this. I thought it was a bad idea last year to rely on Joe Mixon as much as they did. I think they are paying for it now. Yep. But also, looking at Damian Pierce, doesn't it feel like they did that out of necessity? I hate to complain about a thing and then not have a solution. You know what I mean? And that's what I feel like I was doing by last year. It's like, man, I don't like this running Joe Mixon into the ground thing. I don't really know exactly what they're supposed to do about it.
That seems like a tough plan. You need people texting in getting 20, 25 carries.
I'm in.
That seems like a tough plan for Nick Chubb. I don't know how long that rolls.
It's a tough spot to be in.
No, it is.
You can't keep wasting downs with these guys.
Yeah,
man.
No, that's the big thing. It feels like from last year and it translated into this one game so far. A lot of wasted down, a lot of wasted opportunities, a lot of meat left on the bone.
5 o'clock fire coming up next. We will give you the latest here with the Astros, Luis Garcia, as well as some injury news and a new addition to the roster for the Texans. We'll do that coming up next.